Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to PhillyFanatics.com, Philly Sports Talk, at a special time this afternoon, 4 o'clock. And if you're listening later in archive, obviously it doesn't matter what time it is, but if you're listening live on Sunday, it is 4 o'clock, a little early for us today, but circumstances require the early show time. A lot of going on this week. We've got Phillies. Believe it or not, yes, Phillies talk. They have a funk back below 500. But we're not going to focus on that too much. We're going to focus on the draft, Ryan Howard, and the pitching situation. Lots of Phillies news this week. Other topics we'll get to, the NBA Finals, the Stanley Cup Finals, the Eagles minicamp. But let's start off with the Phillies. And I have a Phillies notebook up this week, and we're going to talk about Ryan Howard in just a minute. But Major League Baseball draft was this past couple days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And the Phillies are the first pick. There's a lot of talk they might take a pitcher. Instead, they go with an outfielder from La Costa Canyon High School, Mickey Moniak. Outfielder, bats left, throws right, and, you know, hit for a high average in high school. Whether that means anything or not, we'll find out. Obviously, he's a high prospect. The interesting thing I found, and I wrote about this in my Phillies notebook, is that Moniak, who hit 476, was followed from the Phillies standpoint with the first pick of the second round, Kevin Gowdy, right-handed pitcher, also from a California high school, Santa Barbara High School in California. Santa Barbara, one of my favorite places. Been there once or twice. Nice place, nice town, but, and we like it a lot. But then they follow that with another high school player, Cole Staub from Millard West High School, and that's in Omaha, Nebraska. He's a shortstop. So they take an outfielder, a pitcher, and a shortstop. The interesting thing to me is they were all high school kids. When you look at last year when they had Aaron Nola come in, very ready, major league ready pitcher coming out of college, very poised. You know, these guys are going to take a couple years to develop. So the Phillies are taking a patient approach to this rebuilding process. And they want to get guys. It's apparent. They have some guys in the system, obviously, who are coming up. But they have, you know, they want to build for the future. Keep odds. Obviously, they desperately needed an outfielder. They still desperately need outfielders. The corner outfielders for this team, Rule 5 pickup, Tyler Goodell, looks like the best corner outfielder of the bunch right now. And that's not saying a whole lot. He's hitting about 244, doing well for Rule 5 pick, but not the guy you want, you know, every day. And they put Cody Ashies back now. And Cody Ashies hitting, I have to look it up, but hitting somewhere around 239, 240, maybe a little lower than that, somewhere in the 230s. Won the extra base hit. It's a double in 9 games. You know, not exactly lighting the world on fire since he's been back. And he didn't hit all that well in his rehab assignments either. So, Phillies, anyway, looking to the future, they really don't take a college player until they pick up a couple college. And then the next group, sort of 4 through 10, rounds 4 through 10, are all college guys. So, interesting. They go high school early, then they sort of pick some guys up, you know, mixture of, bunch of pitchers in there, too. If you go through rounds 4 through 10, there's 5 pitchers in there. So, and then they pick 2 more in 12 and 13, although those were high school kids, Justin Miller and Andrew Brown. But the key here is they're looks like they're being patient. They're not you know, jumping on. The early season success did not go to their heads, I will say that. I mean, it went to some people's heads from a fan standpoint, and that's okay. That's why we're fans. You know, and I, like I said, I thought the fall was coming, but I was happy as long as the ride lasted. And, you know, the ride lasted for 2 months. It was a good ride. It was a lot of fun. You know, then they ran into some of the better competition teams that had been playing, the Cubs and the Nationals, 2 series each. That didn't go real well. They're finishing up with the Nationals today, hoping to avoid a sweep. Game starting actually right about now as we're doing this live. So, you know, the Phillies are running the better competition. They're not scoring runs. You know, the pitching just couldn't keep doing what it was doing. And there are some holes now in that pitching staff. I mean, Adam Morgan's, you know, not a good pitcher at this point. Not a good major league pitcher, I should say, at this point. Aaron Nola even had a bad outing yesterday. He's the guy that's sort of been the rock for them. Charlie Morton obviously went down hurt. Jeremy Hellickson, up and down, has a good start. Last two, not been so good. Gets up too many homers. You know, but what you really want from Jeremy Hellickson, honestly, although he doesn't want to hear this, is you want him to be good enough to be a trade bait at the trade deadline. That's really, you know, I know he'd like to stay here, and you know, maybe he's not he's only in his late 20s, so I think you could keep him around if you wanted to. But obviously, if somebody makes you a good offer for Jeremy Hellickson, he's going to go. The Phillies can turn that into a better prospect down the road. But starting to see some holes in that pitching staff. The pitching staff, they won a lot of low-scoring games because the pitching was so good. Vince Velasquez, no one will forget his complete game 16 strikeout debut at Citizens Bank Park. But then he's been going trending downhill anyway. And, of course, this past week, two pitches, and he's out with sore right bicep. That's sometimes the precursor of a more serious injury. So you have to hope that's not the case. The Phillies did put him on the disabled list. Velasquez on the 15-day, could be extended. You just hope it's not something more serious. But his pitching had dropped off anyway. And I'm not, it's a situation where he was so good early on. He still had the live arm, but he's just throwing too many pitches. He's not pitching. He's throwing the ball. He's not really pitching, and he's taking too many pitches. He's not efficient. And sometimes he only gave up two runs, but he's out of the game in 5 innings because he's up to 100 pitches. So he was declining anyway. His last two outings, in fact, he didn't even make it through the fifth inning, not counting the two-pitch outing. So he already was on the decline. And the other guy who's really dropped off, and it's significant, is Hector Neris. And he was almost lights out there in the eighth inning for a while. And then the Phillies had a lead, a one-run lead, and you get to Neris and Gomez, eighth and ninth. That was almost locked up. Well, Hector Neris has given up runs in his last three starts. He gave up three runs in, his last three appearances. He gave up three runs in his last appearance in May. And then he had two scoreless appearances, although he worked out of trouble in them. But that trouble caught up to him. He's given up runs the last three games. One of those games he didn't even record an out, and he's lucky he only got charged with one run. Someone came in behind him, and they got him out of the jam. Gomez actually came in for the, my memory's correct, Gomez came in for the six-out save, and give Pete McCannon credit for doing that, for willing to do that, where so many managers go by the book and say, it's just one inning, that's it. So Hector Neris, big change. That lead's not safe, because the Phillies weren't winning games by a lot. Remember, they're winning all these one-run games for the most part, and all of a sudden now, you have the one run isn't safe anymore when you go to eighth. The one run lead is pretty safe until you win Neris and Gomez. Now it's not so safe in that eighth inning with Hector Neris having trouble. So pitching, the offense still in question. Pitching has declined somewhat. Not that it's awful, but they were getting great pitching before. They're not getting that anymore. And, their margin for error was so slim, and now it's gone. And like I said, when you're not getting that pitching, that one-run win turns into a one-run, two-run, three-run loss. So tough times for the Phillies, but like I said, not unexpected, and we're not going to harp on them too much in terms of negativity. It's kind of what they are, and like I said, I'm obviously excited they were for what they were for 2 months, and let's see where they go from here. One question certainly moving to the future is the leading hitter on this team is now Tommy Joseph, and he has 7 home runs since he's been called up. Ryan Howard is now the backup first baseman. Pete McCannon kind of made it official on Friday that Tommy Joseph is going to be the starter here on out. And you just kind of hope, I don't know. You don't know what happens with Ryan Howard. And that's sort of what I wrote about in PhilliesFanatics.com in my Phillies notebook. What's going to happen with Ryan Howard? You can't trade him. He makes too much money. He's only hitting 150. It's not like he's an asset to another team. Remember, he's basically playing mostly against right-handers, so he's not even facing those tough lefties, and he's still only hitting 150. He has one home run since May 11th, which he hit last week, but it's his only home run. He's just not an effective major league player right now, and you can't even really give him away. Like I said, if the team's going to take him, he's got to help them, and he's not going to help them batting 150 and batting almost exclusively against right-handers. So we will see some more Ryan Howard this week. They're playing Toronto. He's going to be the designated hitter, is my assumption. They're out of Minnesota. So you're going to have two games in Toronto. You're going to have three in Minnesota. Give Ryan Howard a chance to maybe show that he has something left. And who knows? Maybe they can get a team to take him off their hands. But if not, is he going to be the backup first baseman for the rest of the year? You don't want to cut him because of all he's done for this team. But on the other hand, it doesn't make a lot of sense to have him sitting around doing nothing to hit 150 and pinch hitting, maybe playing once a week. and they're doing a little pinch hitting. That's not, you know, it's a tough situation, and I think they have to work it out with Ryan and try to figure out what's the best for everybody. And obviously the best for everybody would be to hit the ball well. The secondary to that would be to move him to a team in the American League as a DH and we could help. But that's not, doesn't look like he can help anybody right now. So really uncomfortable situation with Ryan Howard. You really hope it turns out for the best. He had a lot of years of good service, but there's no question he's been on a steep decline since 2011. Since the end of 2011, that Achilles injury, maybe he would have gone into decline anyway. Maybe the Achilles injury just sort of accelerated the process. But Ryan Howard hasn't been Ryan Howard since the end of 2011, and right now he's barely Darren Ruff, let alone being Ryan Howard. Darren Ruff was hitting it. Believe when Darren Ruff was sent down, he was hitting 158 for a higher average right now than Ryan Howard. So kind of tells you where we are there. So that's the Phillies. They're kind of back to what we expected they would be at the beginning of the year. Again, I don't know if we can be all that upset with that. I think we should be thankful we had the great 2 months. And who knows, maybe they play some weaker teams. Maybe that win-loss record will come back up. So keep an eye on the Phillies. Check out my Philly Fanatics Philly notebook on PhillyFanatics.com. Philadelphia Eagles wrapped up minicamp, and, you know, what did we learn from minicamp? Really, we learned nothing. I think we learned a little bit about Doug Peterson's style, both the way he runs practices and the way he handles issues. We saw it with Fletcher Cox. We saw it with Darren Sproles. And we saw it with the quarterback situation with Sam Bradford. He keeps it pretty much close to the vest. He's not going to say anything outrageous. He seems to want to do things behind closed doors. That's not a surprise. He stops practice. He's not. It's a big change from the Chip Kelly. Run, fast. He seems to focus more on stopping practice and teaching and things like that. But in terms of who can play and who's going to make this team and not make the team, and there's some guys you can see who, I don't know, maybe a little better than you thought. Mills at cornerback is one. But you really don't know until they're running around in shorts. You really don't know until you see them with the pads on. And even then, you don't know until you see the other team run plays, and not just in practice, but another team. And even in preseason, you see mostly vanilla. So, again, I'll say we won't know for sure until we see the regular season, but you can tell a lot more, at least when guys are tackling, if they can play, than if they're running around. And in offense, whether they can break tackles or how they handle being tackled. I mean, if you fumble the ball in minicamp, that's really bad. Or you're not catching the ball, that's really bad. So you can't learn a lot from minicamp. You really can't. I know everybody tries to come up with their 10 reasons, the 10 things we learned, and take it with a grain of salt. I'm not saying it's completely wrong. I think there's some things people can pick up on, but grain of salt until you see them actually in pads in practice, and then maybe even more until you see them in pads in the exhibition. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to call them exhibition. In the preseason games, the NFL doesn't like exhibition. Unfortunately, Eagles camp ended with a really bad story. Well, it was pretty much an uneventful camp once Fletcher Cox and Darren Sproles came in, and that is Nelson Aguilar, rookie last season, coming in a second year receiver, charged with sexual assault. I shouldn't say that. Not charged yet. My fault. Accused of sexual assault. Apparently, when minicamp was over, Nelson Aguilar and some other players, two of whom have been identified as Fletcher Cox and Connor Barwin, went to cheerleaders, which is what's known as a gentleman's club. And Nelson Aguilar has been accused of sexual assault with one of the employees there, a stripper. And that's not denigrating the person for her job, because some people do that, use that as a pejorative, and say, well, he don't believe a stripper. I'm not saying that. She could very well be telling the truth. So I wasn't there. I don't know the whole story. I know the leaks and stuff I've heard. I'm not going to necessarily go into all of them. But there's, obviously going to be two sides to the story. And we know her side, we don't know the details yet, but we know that her side is that Nelson Aguilar sexually assaulted her. We'll find out more as the times come. I guess the term is shame the victim, which has been done somewhat already, and we don't want to do that. But also, people are innocent until proven guilty. Just because you're a celebrity football player doesn't mean you're guilty. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in this case. But it certainly was a negative note on which to end training camp. And that's just looking at it from a football standpoint. Obviously, it's a more serious issue than that. It's a serious issue. And Nelson Aguilar, if he in any way, even if he's not found criminally guilty, if it's clear that he sexually assaulted this woman and, you know, it's a technicality or there's a question or something, his position with the Eagles should be in jeopardy. And like I said, I'm not going to prejudge him, and I'm not saying get rid of him now. We don't know what happened. But even if he's not found criminally guilty, if he is found to have, some abhorrent conduct in this case, that'd be enough for me to say, see you later. Take it off. You know, we can get another receiver. Certainly get another one, get 23 catches, but that's not the issue. So, guy who people had high hopes for last year may have short-circuited his career. And like I said, it's a more serious issue than a football career, but this is a sports show. Obviously, from the woman's standpoint and how it affects her life, is the most important part of the story. But this is a sports show. We're looking at it from a football standpoint. And, this guy may have short-circuited his career here. So, like we said, it's a development to follow, but it certainly was not a positive way to end training camp. And, the old boys will be boys, but, is that the way you celebrate the end of training camp, is going to a gentleman's club and spending a whole bunch of money, apparently, if the reports are to be believed? That doesn't seem right. Now I'm the moral police, so I'll stay out of that. So we'll skip through that. But certainly, Eagles training camp starts July 25th. That's the next big date for us. That's what we'll be looking forward to for the Philadelphia Eagles. And hopefully, we won't have any more of this type of news. This is draft month for NBA, NHL, and of course, the NFL draft was back at the end of April, beginning of May, end of April. It's a big month. The Phillies had the first pick in their draft. The 76ers are going to have the first pick in their draft coming up June 23rd. Ben Simmons at LSU, Brandon Ingram at Duke are the two main choices. Don't forget the Sixers also down there 24 and 26 in the first round. So they have some multiple picks, and maybe they can trade up. Maybe they can get two top picks there. But it's really – these drafts are so important when you're at the top of the draft. And as I pointed out in my fish and chips column, the Eagles were at number two. So you sort of have three successive drafts where the Eagles are at number two, Philly's at one, and the Sixers at one. And if you make a mistake there, it can really set back your franchise. So Mickey Moniak, the hard thing with the baseball draft is that you don't see these guys. So I can't tell you if he's going to be good or not. I don't know. I can't tell you how good he's going to be. All reports are seem to be he's a pretty solid player. Obviously, went number one. But he wasn't head and shoulders above everybody else. And there wasn't a guy this year who was head and shoulders above everybody else. So you have to hope he works out to be a really good major leaguer. At number one, that's what you have to get. Sixers have to get a guy who can make an impact at number one. The disadvantage in basketball is, unless you send them to the development league, which is not going to happen with the number one pick, the Phillies can let Moniak develop for a while. They can let him progress. But the Sixers have to get somebody who can play right away. And Ben Simmons, Brandon Ingram, we'll see which one they pick. But they can't make a mistake because it can really set back the franchise. We do have a caller on the line. What's your name, please? Caller, have a question? Okay, if you do, jump right in. I'm going to leave you on the line live, so if you have a question, jump in. So the Sixers, like I said, much like the Phillies, and we won't know for a couple of years, the Phillies, it'll take longer to find out whether these guys that pick up at the top, Moniak and Gowdy, can play. They're high school kids. It'll take 3-4 years, maybe even five, till we see whether they, at least by, know by then in the minors, but whether they're going to be good major league players. Might take 5 years from now. Sixers don't have a five-year luxury. They have to get it right with that first pick, and tell you the truth, they have to get something out of 24 and 26 also. Like I said, whether that's trading up or if it's picking, one guy or, get two guys and hope one of them can play, the Sixers have to come out of that draft with a good number one pick, and at least one of the other guys has to be able to play. And I mean play right away. They don't have to be stars right away, but they have to play. And that number one pick better be a star sooner or later. So it's a big month for drafts. Of course, the Flyers also – I'll pick him. They don't pick till 18th. And let's Ron Hextall. Ron Hextall, what are you waiting for? Trade up. got to get to number one or two, just like all the other Philadelphia teams. Although, thankfully, the Flyers didn't get their own merit by having a really bad record, like the Sixers, the Phillies did. Let's turn to, we've got a couple championship series going on right now, NBA and NHL. Let's start with the NBA Finals. The Golden State Warriors against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Just another thing, and I mentioned this in my Fish and Chips column. People who listen to the show regularly and read the website know that I am not president of the LeBron James fan club. I have great respect for the guy as a player, but I don't particularly like him. That's not a secret. I don't make a secret of that. It's amazing he's been in six straight NBA Finals. That's really remarkable. That means his teams, and it's the Cavaliers and the Heat, have won 18 straight Eastern Conference series. I don't care how good you are. With all the things that can happen in the playoffs and people getting hurt and, you know, you get a bad call here or there or something, you know, someone gets hot on the other team, it's really remarkable that he's in six straight NBA Finals. Having said that, it looks, and by the way, you look around, and not many people get even close to that. He is the first non-Celtic. So there were some of them, like, I think there were seven or eight Celtics, who during that string where they kept on the championship game back in the 60s, you know, they got their six straight. Other than that, no one's done it except for LeBron James. He's done it with two different teams, obviously. Really remarkable accomplishment on his part. But it looks like the Golden State Warriors are going to win their second straight championship, meaning LeBron and company are going to lose two in a row to them, and also lost to the Spurs the year before when he was with the Heat. So you got LeBron dropping to 2-5, I believe it will be, if the Warriors win, and it certainly looks like they're going to. And a lot of things I wrote in my preview, my NBA Finals preview, have come true in the sense that, like, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are terrific, but really it's the depth. Golden State has superior quality depth to what the Cavaliers have. The Cavaliers have their big three, but their depth, while they have some, is not nearly as talented as what the Warriors have. And when you have Draymond Green almost putting up triple-doubles, when you have Andre Iguodala playing a key role, he doesn't have to do what he did with the Sixers, he doesn't have to score a lot of points anymore. He does throw up some three-pointers sometimes, which he probably shouldn't do. But, you know, he scores on the break, he scores inside, in transition he scores, and he plays really good defense. And then, and you look at all the players they have, Sean Livingston, pretty much overlooked. One time he was a really highly touted player, had some knee surgeries, kind of slowed him down a little bit. Sean Livingston's been an important player. And Golden State had a 2-1 lead going into game four without really Steph Curry being hot. And then Steph Curry went off for 38 in game four. They're up 3-1. It looks like it's going to be Golden State again. But, you know, those teams are kind of getting used to being in the finals, at least LeBron is. And whether the Cavaliers keep getting back there is going to be a question. I will say one thing. It turns out the problem was not Dave Blatt. And that's – there's here now I have to be negative about LeBron. I was trying not to be. But, you know, they got rid of their coach, and LeBron clearly wanted a change in coaches, even though he played – he feigned innocence later. Oh, I didn't know. Which, if you believe that one, like I said, you know, I got a bridge to sell you. And a couple of used cars also, because if you believe LeBron didn't know the coach was going to go, that just defies disbelief here. Or defies belief, I guess it would be. It is disbelief. LeBron James helped get rid of that coach, Dave Blatt. They replaced him with Tyronn Lue. Well, guess what? The team doesn't play defense as well as it did before. And maybe Dave Blatt was a pain, and maybe they didn't like his emphasis on defense, and maybe he, you know, wasn't a player's player guy, you know, player's coach guy, where the players, like, bonded with him and stuff like that. But the Cavaliers are not playing really good defense, and that was sort of what Dave Blatt was emphasizing. They pushed the ball more with Tyronn Lue. They've thrown up shots quicker, maybe a little quicker pace, much like the Golden State style. But Golden State plays really good defense. Watch Golden State play defense. Watch Harrison Barnes. Watch Andre Iguodala. Watch Klay Thompson. You know, Steph Curry's injured. It hurts his defense a little bit. Watch all their guys play defense. They play really, really good team defense. The Cavaliers don't, and that's one of the other differences in the series. If Klay Thompson and Steph Curry were going off, you know, scoring 35 points a night, you'd say, well, that's the difference. But it's not. It hasn't been. Up till game four, Curry only had, I think, 48 points total in three games. What's helped them is their defense and their team depth. So Golden State up 3-1. I think they're going to finish them off. Monday night is game five, and it could end right there, and we'll see. Again, a caller on the line. Caller, you have a question? Okay. Let's go to Stanley Cup Finals. the San Jose Sharks, like, again, the contrast here, but, you know, Golden State back for the second straight year. They hadn't won a title in 40 years before that. Cavaliers, although LeBron's been six in a row, Cleveland hasn't won a championship since 1964. Not in the major sport anyway. I'm not talking about the Cleveland Crunch or and the minor league hockey team, the Monsters. It's just it just won the other night. Major sports, Cleveland has not won a championship since 1964, the Browns. So they know what it's like, even though LeBron's been in the finals a bunch of times in a row. Only two of those were with Cavaliers, and they have yet to win a title. Like I said, the whole city hasn't won a title. In the NHL Stanley Cup Finals, you have the Penguins, who we think of as perennial contenders. But honestly, they haven't been in the championship round. They haven't been in the Stanley Cup Finals since 2009. That's before the Flyers were last there, when the Flyers lost to Blackhawks. It was the year before the Flyers lost to Blackhawks. So Sidney Crosby, best player in the league, they haven't been to the finals. So you really have to cherish when you get to the finals. San Jose Sharks, 24-year history, haven't been to the finals. 24-season history. That was a strike year, I guess. It's 25 years, but it's 24 seasons. Had never been to the finals before this year. And they got guys like Joe Thornton, who's been in the league since 98, who's never been to the finals. And Patrick Marleau, who's been with the Sharks his whole career, 18 years, never been in the finals. These guys cherish this opportunity. It might be their only opportunity. Dinah Zubris, a fourth-line player for the Sharks, made the Stanley Cup Finals as a rookie with the Flyers in 97. It's his first year. He makes the finals. Maybe he thinks he was going to get back there some more, especially being on the team with Eric Lindros. But Dinah Zubris only got back once more with New Jersey, ironically with Pete DeBoer, the head coach, who's the coach of the Sharks. And he's back now, and it might be his final opportunity. The Penguins took a 3-1 series lead. Looked like they were going to take it. There's command seat here in the driver's seat. But San Jose came back and won that game the other night. I mean, they were ahead early, came back from a 3-1 deficit in the series to make it 3-2. They scored twice early, like in the first 3 minutes early. Penguins come back with two goals. Sharks score in the third and then score an empty netter to seal the victory. It's 3-2 going back to San Jose. If they win that game tonight, then it's all tied up 3-3 and they're going to game seven. And, boy, that would be something else if the Sharks came back and won that from a 3-1 deficit. But, you know, you can't count the Penguins, and then they still are in command. So lots of excitement in the Stanley Cup. I have to say the NBA Finals, the games themselves, this Game 4 was the closest game, have not been close to the excitement in the NHL games, which have been much closer, closely contested, and for that reason led to more excitement. I know the NBA will get better ratings, and they have more star power with LeBron James and Steph Curry headlining it. But the NHL playoffs has been a far better entertainment value. I think it always is, but it's especially true this year. Caller, you have one last chance to make a comment.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'm here. Okay, yeah, back to the NBA playoffs. It seems for a while the NBA was star laden, where you had to have the one, two, or three best players of their position on your team to win a championship. That's what LeBron did in Miami. I think they. Golden State Warriors, the reason people are liking them so much is they're a real team. Yeah, they have Steph Curry, who's an MVP, but no one else really is going to be the top player at his position in the rest of, as opposed to the rest of the league. And I think they have such complementary players, they're proving that the team is going to beat an individual most of the time.
Absolutely. Is this Bill?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. No,
yes.
I think you're absolutely correct, and it's – And it was the same thing when LeBron was in Miami. The Spurs played the team basketball game, and beat them. And I think you're really onto something there. You know, you're right. The Golden State does have a star, and Klay Thompson's like a secondary star. But you're absolutely right about the team defense and the team style. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Right, and if you go back to when Cleveland made the finals 6 years ago, they had LeBron and nobody else, and they just taken apart by a better team. And I think that trading on over to the Sixers now in their future, it looks like they're going to either make mistakes or what they're going to do with the draft. No one really knows, but they do seem to have enough players to build around and get some excitement going if they could get the right mix. I want to know your opinion.
And
if the
you
Sixers
just hit the key. Right,
I think
mix
the Sixers have
the key.
Yeah.
And they don't have a point guard right now, and I'm not sure they have a shooting guard. So they better get some of those pieces. All right.
They better get shooting.
Bill, thank you for your call. That's it for the live show. I'm going to do my final thought on the other side. Please check out PhillyConnect.com. Lots of great stuff. Thank you, Bill, for calling. Muhammad, great point, too. Muhammad Ali, all sorts of good stories up there. And now just for those in archive now, and we are in archive, and Bill, I don't know if you're still there, but we've been hit with a lot of sports deaths, and I talked about this last week, although I focused on my own personal loss, and I was at his funeral earlier this week, my high school and elementary school gym teacher and health teacher and assistant basketball coach and everything else, and Fred Katona. Like I said last week, I wrote my column on his life. Boy, I hope that, you know, I can have one half as much influence on one tenth as many students as he did during his career. But in the sports world, we lost Rick McLeish 2 weeks ago, Muhammad Ali, whose funeral was yesterday, it was Friday, and we lost another great on Friday, and that's Gordie Howe. And Gordie Howe, you know, you hear him on the Flyers broadcast because they always refer to that Gordie Howe hat trick where you score a goal, get an assist, and get in a fight. You know, it sort of trivializes Gordie Howe a little bit, I think, but it does point to the essence of the man as a player in that he was talented, he could pass the puck, he could score goals, and he was a tough guy, too. And that's not just about fighting. That's about body checks. Of course, he did have a reputation for getting his elbows up. But Gordie Howe, he was the player in NHL history. I mean, the people debate it, but coming into the early 70s, I mean, you know, Bobby Orr was getting into the conversation, but really a lot of people thought Gordie Howe was the best player. He was called Mr. Hockey for a reason. So until you had, you know, Lemieux and Gretzky, with Gretzky being the all-time great, you know, Gordie Howe was the man. He was the guy. He was Mr. Hockey. And he died Friday, age 88. Obviously, in Philadelphia, we have some connection to him. His son, Mark Howe, a Hall of Fame defenseman who played for the Flyers, best defenseman in Flyers history, and remains the best defenseman in Flyers history to this day, Gordie's son. And one of the amazing things with Gordie Howe, too, was not just what a great player he was, but the longevity he had. He came back out of retirement when the World Hockey Association started and played with Mark Howe and with Marty Howe, his sons. And Gordie Howe then played one more season in the NHL when the WHA merged with the NHL. He played for the Hartford Whalers 1 year, and he was in his 50s. And you know, hockey's a tough game to play in your 50s. I don't know. I could play floor hockey in my 50s, let alone play ice hockey. Gordie Howe, remarkable guy. You know, it's not unexpected. He's had health problems in recent years. He is 88. He was 88 years old. But just wishing condolences to the Howe family and all the friends and all the people. I would say all the people influenced by Gordie Howe, but boy, that number would be. I couldn't even fathom that number because in some ways, almost everybody who played hockey coming out of that era was influenced by Gordie Howe. If you played against him, you played with him. If you watched him play, I would think in some way he influenced you. So condolences, loss of Gordie Howe. Let's hope we're done losing great players and great people. And that's it for this week's show. Please check out PhillyFanatics.com. Like I said, we have my Phillies notebook up there, Fish and Chips. Column up there, lots of good stuff coming. We have the Muhammad Ali stuff is still up there, including Ali's 10 best fights, the 15 the most memorable fights. We have a place for you to check out. You're putting your own opinion in on what the Sixers should do with that number one pick. So that's it for this week's show. I am Eric Fisher for myself. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next week.